Okay, well, you hear a lot in about chaos theory, I think, if you are, you know, at all in tune to scientific news or whatever. And that chaos theory is part of the whole package under the big banner of complexity science. Chaos theory is very poorly named because we think of chaos as being terrible. You know, there's chaos in Japan. Clearly, there's nothing, literally, the order has been destroyed, the order of homes and streets and life and families and everything. Cars are on top of buildings. Buses are wrapped around roofs. You know, it literally is chaotic. And that is, in physics, entropic chaos, where naturally things break down and wear down, and then you have forces like a tsunami and an earthquake that will accelerate that process. But there's a natural process of decay over time, and that's entropic chaos, very well documented in physics. But this is called, this kind of chaos is called deterministic chaos. It is more less about chaos as extreme disarray as it is intensely complex, highly charged information coming out of movement. And it is out of this seemingly chaotic movement, this deterministic chaos, actually, that new things emerge. Usually when I gave these lectures in person, I showed, and have they seen the cymatics tape, Tina? Tina? Hello? Somebody want to, hello? Is anybody hearing me?
I didn't have my mic on. Yes, Barbara, they have seen Jeff Volk with the cymatics.
Oh, that's right, Jeff Kim. Very good. So that's really, when you look at the cymatics videotape, and I always point this out, and Jeff talks about it too, is that what you see is you see the sand, and when you get close in on one of the forms, you notice how all the sand grains are still moving, they're twirling. That's because that's a system in motion, and even though the force of what we call attractors has pulled that into a form, it is still a moving form. So when you change the pitch, as they do on the tape, the first thing that happens is a lot of what looks like chaotic movement, and then it shifts into another form because the new attractor, which in that case is the pitch itself, as a limit cycle attractor, is giving shape to that movement. But it's still moving. That's what deterministic chaos is. And the new shape is what they call a new bifurcation or a new direction. So when you have simple movement, if you add more movement, and in fact, candle, when you blow out a candle, if you look at it carefully, at first it goes straight up, and then as it gets higher, it begins to wiggle until it just goes into, you know, a seemingly unordered movement. And that's chaotic movement out of increased information. And if that keeps going, then a new direction will be taken. One of the things that some people find pretty confusing in my book, and it's probably because I didn't write it well, is this idea of the 1F spectrum time change. That is, you know, when you have a system in motion, the 1F spectrum time change is when that system will break into a new bifurcation. It's the timing of a new thing out of chaos, which is important because none of this is random. Because it's so chaotic and so hard for us to look at, it seems like it has no order. But actually, there is an exquisite order underneath all of this. And one of the points of order is when the system breaks into a new form or a new shape. And that's what that time measurement called the 1F spectrum is. So it is actually pretty key when you're trying to use these principles to make differences in people's lives, basically, is what we're saying, is for me as a therapeutic tool or you as a healing tool. So, boy, that's the Cliff Notes version of complexity science, but It's a fascinating study, and it's very difficult, and it took me years to kind of sort through it because I'm not a physicist. But it just made so much sense to me in terms of what I was seeing in music therapy interactions, what I see in sound healing interactions, what I see when I see Tina working with a client, a patient. It's that whole system moving to a new direction, and at some point that something happens with the patient because Tina's changed the mode or she's up to tempo or whatever, and then boom, something will happen with the client, and that's a change, a bifurcation out of that complexity. In living systems, as I've already told you, what they call nonlinear or chaotic dynamics happens all through the body. The immune system, the digestive system, how nerves work, how our eyes gather information and focus it on the brain, and a perception occurs. Same things with the ears. The heart, when the point at which the lining of our stomach changes over approximately every 24 hours, when our skin cells die and shed and get new ones. So all of that is based on this 1F spectrum time change, and our physical body and our physical world is all in what they call fractal forms. And right now you all can, I'm sure, look out your window and see a tree without leaves on and see all the multiple branching of that. That's a fractal form. Fractals are a frozen picture of complex movement. So when a tree grows, it is acting out this branching in multiple complex branching in kind of slow motion compared to other things. Same way with the erosion of the mountains. Back when they were started, computer animation, you know, it didn't look very natural. I mean, it was amazing, but it didn't look very natural. And what they did was they calculated the natural shifts of, you know, when flames flame and when hair moves and when cloth rustles, based on complexity science, and programmed it into the computer to make it look more real. They were duplicating what is just a constant in our world. So our physical selves, our brains, how our brain works, how our body works, how our emotions work, are all based on complex dynamics. And we are, you know, as a physical being, we are constantly recreating ourselves. Called self-organization. We have templates set by the chromosomes for what a liver looks like and what a stomach looks like and what a heart looks like. And, I mean, we have a completely new body every 7 years because the cells are replaced and sloughed off and that sort of thing. And so the self-organization works to create, you know, so when you create a new heart, it matches the template for the heart, or you would suddenly have a liver where your heart's supposed to be. You know, it just doesn't do that. It just creates the system. And we are what's known as a recursive organization because we have little systems that create a little bigger system. So we have DNA that creates proteins, which creates molecules, which creates chains of molecules, which creates simple cells, which creates a bunch of cells come together and creates an organ, and an organ is part of a system like the digestive system, which is then part of the whole body. I mean, we are just systems within systems within systems within systems. And every level of that organization influences every other level so that something at the DNA level can change that whole organization all the way up to the top, the brain and consciousness. But what's also true is the top can influence everything all the way down. So consciousness and what we would call spiritual consciousness can affect and go down the chain of recursive organization. So it is impactful up and down the system. And we need to have enough information in our system to maintain edge of chaos dynamics. We need to have enough of this complex movement going so that we can right ourselves after environmental or emotional knocks. You know, we're exposed to viruses every day. We don't get a new cold or flu every day. Sometimes we do get it, but most of the time our immune system has enough going for it, has enough information going for it, that it can do what it's supposed to do and write the body back to being okay and not letting the virus multiply in our cells. We're coming up here on, in my world, in the finals, the beginning of May, and three-quarters of my students will be ill during that time. Well, they're under stress. They don't get enough sleep. They're living on coffee and pizza. So their body doesn't have enough of the right kind of movement and energy it needs to fight those things off, and they get sick. And we know that. We all know that. We do it ourselves. So that edge of chaos is very important. Not too much chaos, like in the heart, because now you're in defibrillation. That doesn't work. Too much chaos, you decrease the heart variability, becomes too static. It can't deal with changes, and you have a heart attack or you have heart failure. You need just enough of that complex movement to keep you righted so that you're kind of dancing right there between too much and too little. But you need a lot of input, a lot of information for that. So what I did was I looked at music itself as a complex dynamical system and just looked at the nature of this physical thing we call music to see if it fit the criteria. And I hope you're listening and hear that everything I've been talking about really fits music perfectly. I mean, the prevalence of movement. You know, there's no harp playing unless your fingers move. There's no tone unless the string vibrates. There's no hearing a tone unless air molecules are moving. There's no getting the signal to the brain unless the eardrum is vibrating and the bones of the middle ear are moving. I mean, it's movement, 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 movement. It's nonlinear in nature. An example I give all the time is I'm an orchestral player and I'm a violinist, and I played almost always second violin in my playing career. And the second violin part all by itself is not exactly the glamour part. It can be pretty boring and pretty supportive. But, you know, when you put it together with everything else and you're playing with everybody and all those parts and the melody and the harmony and the basses and the cellos and the trumpets and the whatever, it's glorious. It's far greater than the sum of its parts. Music just is nonlinear in nature. We know that a lot of the way that instruments build up sound, resonator chambers and that sort of thing, is based on nonlinear dynamics. I think, you know, the sensitivity to initial conditions, where we start from, the conductor of an orchestra, the players, which harpist, you know, and you know very well that there are lots of people playing the same music, but it's not the same event because you have different initial conditions and different person is playing. We can show a tractors that pull the system into organization, acting in music, the importance of the wholeness. Again, I mean, I could play you some of my second violin parts, but you wouldn't stay interested very long because they're pretty darn boring. But the wholeness of it, a symphony or a string quartet, you would listen because it has that sense of wholeness. You can't cut it up and get the whole experience. And music is absolutely chock full of these 1F spectrum time changes. What we were just talking about a little while ago, the regular irregularity of complexity that you were mentioning about the rhythms, and the metronomic rhythms are not very moving, but the regular irregularity of a human being playing music is. And those are all based on the F1 spectrum time changes. So that when we listen to music, and particularly when we play music, we are bathed in these natural time intervals that allow our bodies, our minds, our awareness to shift in the ways it needs to stay vital. So, questions at this point before I talk about the actual theory.